It's the depth of scoring. They could be as deep as any team in the NHL, and not just from the front end, but from the back end as well. And you look to the third and fourth lines, they're getting contributions right across the board.
Is it time to talk about this team being the best, perhaps, in the entire league?
I think it is. They've got the goaltending right now in Connor Hellebuyck. They've got as deep a defensive core as anybody does in the league. And when they get the depth of scoring, as they're getting right now, with that first line, that second line, they are good to go.
That's Dave Poulin last night on TSN SportsCenter talking up the first place Winnipeg Jets. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're going to be joined by Colton Orr coming up at the bottom of the hour. But this segment is brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com.
I know Frank was loving all of those goals last night.
Yeah, Frank's already been tweeting us this morning. He's a regular listener of the program, of course. The Jets off to a good start in the month of December, getting their first victory last night at home against the Golden Knights. They have another 6 games at home this month, 8 on the road. There's a key stretch in this month, though. They got those 4 divisional games, and they're all coming up in sort of a one-week time from Thursday, December 14th through Tuesday, December 19th. That's the key stretch there where you have at home to Chicago, a sort of struggling Chicago Blackhawks team, a home-and-home back-to-back against the St. Louis Blues, and then the Nashville Predators. So that's the key stretch for this month of December for the Winnipeg Jets, I'd say.
Yeah, I would agree with that, Drew, and I don't think Dave is going to disagree with that. When you talk about St. Louis and Nashville, you're talking about, you know, top teams in the Central Division. And, you know, after tomorrow night's game, Dave, against the Ottawa Senators, you know, the Jets are temporarily in the Atlantic Division, and that's not necessarily a bad thing because the Atlantic Division, I would argue, is probably the worst division in the league. And, you know, you've got Detroit and you've got Florida, but obviously, you know, Tampa Bay is the big game next Saturday night in Tampa Bay. And, you know, that guys could possibly determine, you know, who's temporarily in first place, right? With Tampa Bay right now having the edge, Dave, with the regulation wins. But, you know, certainly, Drew, when you look at the schedule, you know, it's not the hardest schedule when you consider that, you know, there are only, I believe, there's no back-to-backs.
Yes, there is. The St. Louis games are back-to-back.
Sorry, one set of back-to-backs against St. Louis. But
both teams are in the same
right,
boat there,
but,
yeah.
You know, you've got, you know, the Christmas break there between the 24th and the 26th. But aside from that, I mean, you're looking at, you know, the Islanders are going to be tough games at the end of the month. And you guys remember the Islanders defeated the Jets last year on New Year's Eve, and the Islanders were struggling at that time. But, you know, certainly, you know, those games coming up against the Blues and the Predators. I mean, these are the teams, Drew, that the Jets are going to be competing with for the division lead.
Those are the benchmark games.
Exactly. Those are benchmark games. And, you know, I've said this many times before, Drew.
Yeah.
Even though the Jets right now are tops in the Western Conference, I still think the Nashville Predators are the best team in the Western Conference. And that's not just because they went to the Stanley Cup Final last year. I think top to bottom guys, and then you bring in Kyle Turris, you know, up the middle right now with Ryan Johansson and Kyle Turris and Nick Bonino and Colton Sissons. I think, you know, 1-4, Dave, they're really strong up the middle. We know how good they are on the back end and in goal with Pekka Rinne. So, you know, the Jets right now, there's no reason to believe that they can't keep this going when you consider, you know, they've got some easier games against Detroit and Florida coming up. And then, you know, later in the month, you've got the Edmonton Oilers, who are a complete mess, you know, later in the month on New Year's Eve. So, you know, it's not an easy schedule, Dave, because you still have to win the games, but you wouldn't say it's a hard schedule either.
No, I don't think so at all. And I think the fact is that there's been a little bit of talk about the, you know, the Jets having to fly to different time zones and the idea that the Jets don't have as much, you know, time off to practice. Now, that's the one thing they're focusing on. Recovery time, they have it. Because if you've noticed this year, what the team's doing, rather than flying home after games, is that they're staying overnight, getting home the next day. So they're sacrificing a day of practice.
It's all the sleep experts recommend.
Right, and it, to be honest with you, it makes a lot of sense. It would appear, because it's obviously it's successful right now. They're playing particularly well. So the practice may be not as necessary. They might not be as crisp. So they have to when they do have those practice opportunities, take advantage of them. But look, even today, when they could have a practice, they're choosing to instead have an off-ice workout. So
even the morning skates in a lot of the time have been optional, which is a sort of a change from Paul Maurice.
Yeah, but he, you know what, Paul Maurice was talking about that. I got the sense that he was going to go towards that this year,
right,
that he was going to go to more of an optional opportunity for players in the pregame, but making obviously taking full you know, benefit of the practice times that this team does have. You know, of course, the 17th game on against St. Louis is a game that everybody here will probably have marked down. It's the return of Chris Thorburn.
Oh, yes,
I suspect it'll be a very long, maybe 10-15 minute pregame ceremony, jersey retirement, that sort of thing. But
we're going to be conducting that ceremony.
Oh, obviously. I mean, there's no question about that. And then I think the game that the Jets have to have circled, though, is the game on the 19th against Nashville. I think that they got embarrassed by Nashville. Nashville, I agree with Ezzie, is probably the class of the Western Conference. And I think that the Jets need to go in there and know that they're as well good. They can compete with those top teams.
When we come back, Colton Orr is going to join us. We'll talk a little bit about the Rangers, talk a little bit about the Leafs, and maybe look around the NHL with Colton Orr. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live at Toy Mountain at CF Polo Park in support of the Salvation Army on TSN 1290. Bottom of the hour, you're listening to TSN 1290. It's a family affair here at Toy Mountain at CF Polo Park in support of the Salvation Army. My wife and kids just came by, and Bo's mom is here from 99.9 Bob FM.
Where did Sheldon go, though?
My dad was here
earlier.
Went
to walk the dog.
He went to walk the dog, so it is quite the family affair here at CF Polo Park. We're going to be here with you on air until 12 noon. The toy drive goes all the way until, I believe, 9 o'clock tonight, so you have plenty of time to come on down, say hello, throw your name into the draw, some great prizes being given away here in support of Toy Mountain and the Salvation Army. For now, as the bottom of the hour, let's head to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program, he's a former player in the NHL with the Leafs and the Rangers. He's, of course, a good old local Manitoba boy. Colton Orr, welcome back to the program.
Hey guys, how you doing? Thanks for having me, and that's awesome. I've seen a couple of images on Twitter about the toy drive at Polo Park. That's amazing. Amazing you guys are there and doing that, and hopefully there's a really good turnout going on.
It is a fantastic turnout, and there's always room for more, and we appreciate those kind words, Colton. Thanks for that.
It was a little bit awkward, though, Colton, when Drew tried to rip a toy out of a kid's hands.
it looked fun. What can I say? You know, I thought that's how it worked. We just get to take a toy home with us as well, but apparently I learned my lesson quickly there.
Well, that's the best thing. I got a 5-year-old daughter and a 1.5-year-old son, and when I go shopping for toys, I'm looking for things that, you know, I want to play with, cars,
that's
and
right.
You know, stuff that looks fun for me as well.
Absolutely, that's what parenting's all about. Colton, obviously brought you on. We'll talk about the Leafs and the Rangers. We'll look around the NHL as well. You know, I look at this Rangers team, and you've been doing some work, some analysis for the Rangers, and it's not that long ago where, had they lost to the Golden Knights on home ice, there was a lot of talk, there was a lot of chatter that Alain Vigneault may have been out of a job the next day. Meanwhile, here we sit on December the 2nd, and this Rangers team has bounced back, and they're currently in a playoff spot in the wild card spot in the Eastern Conference. Is it just go to show you that maybe we're too quick with knee-jerk reactions?
Well, yeah, I don't know how much truth there was to the, you know, Vigneault being fired. There's definitely rumors. There's a lot going on. They didn't have a great start, and they weren't playing to their potential early, and they were just having some real defensive problems. Lundqvist wasn't looking out of the part. Just a lot of panic set in here real early on, but they've really turned things around now. Lundqvist is playing at the top of his game right now. He's watching him, he's making some big saves and really making key saves to keep his team in it. And then they've sharpened up their game defensively, and they've got some they got four solid good lines that go out there every night that you have to worry about scoring on them. VC's been on the fourth line some nights, and he's still finding ways to produce and find game winners and shootout winners. So this team is definitely now playing a lot better than they were. But if you look at them in the standings, and they've made up all these points, and they're still fighting for that last playoff spot. So just goes to show you how tight this Eastern Division is early here. And it's going to be a battle for them the rest of the season, trying to keep up in that playoff spot.
You know, Colton, when you think of goal scoring in the New York Rangers, you think of Mika Zibanejad, you think of Matt Zuccarello, you think of Chris Kreider, but Michael Grabner had the Hattie last night. He's now got 13 goals on the season, only two assists, so he's obviously going for the Cy Young Award here. But does Michael Grabner get enough credit for how productive he's been for the Rangers, not only this year, but last year too?
Well, the thing with Grabner, he scores in bunches. He tends to go on these streaks where he's just hot. His skating sometimes just looks like there's no one else as fast as him in the league. Like last night, it didn't look like anybody could keep up with him. And even on those empty netters that he got, he worked for them. Like he had to beat men. He had to like find the open ice, and it was just he's really fun to watch with just how much speed he is. And I do think he needs some more credit on even scoring empty netter goals. I was thinking about this last night. Everyone's like, oh, he's a guy who gets a bunch of empty netters. But if you're getting empty netters, that means you're giving your team the insurance, and they're not going to have a chance to come back. So they're important goals in games like that to kind of close them out. And he does that well just by using his speed, and he's finding other ways to score 5-on-5. So I really like his game and speed and what he's brought to the Rangers so far.
Colton, the Rangers played in the most famous arena in the NHL at the MSG, and they're 11-5-2. They played a lot of games at home, not that much on the road, but their road record hasn't been that good. So what do you think is the reason for the disparity home and away, and what are they going to have to do to get it better, because you know they're going to have a lot of games on the road?
Well, what's been a struggle with them this year has been their starts. And even at home, they tend to be getting down real early, letting those early goals in the first period. So they're going to have to find a way, especially on the road. It's not as easy to come back when you're on the road. You don't have the matchups you want. So it's definitely something that they're going to have to work on going forward is their starts on the road, because you don't want to be playing catch-up on the road. So, and they're going to have a lot coming up because I know they're playing a lot of home. I think they have something like, I think it's the Grammys or something going on later on in the MSG. So they're going to have a stress where they're not going to be at home in for like 3 weeks. So it's going to be good for them to start to prepare and find ways to win those road games and improve that record.
Are you going to walk the red carpet at the Grammys this year, Colton?
I will not be there. No, it's not my thing.
Colton Orr is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, discussing the Rangers, discussing the Leafs. And, you know, Colton, I want to talk about the Leafs. You obviously spent a lot of your career in Toronto. And I was reading Jordan Eberle's comments about, you know, his experience in Edmonton and sort of how refreshed he is now to be on Long Island, and how the media in Edmonton really wore him down with, you know, what he perceives to be constant negativity. Having played in Toronto, what's it like for a player to sort of be in that fishbowl where, you know, you're never quite as good as your high points, but you're never quite as bad as your low points? You know, what's it like to sort of balance the pride and the enjoyment that comes with being a professional hockey player with the trials and tribulations that come with being a professional hockey player in a hockey-crazed market?
Yeah, it's in Toronto, you're under a microscope. And when I was there, for me personally, it began to become pretty tough, with the whole talk about and fighting and hockey and concussions and everything. So that was all you'd see. That's all that everyone wanted to talk about. So everything was just magnified when I was playing there. So it could be a real tough thing if you're not able to kind of just tune that out and find ways to deal with it, because you're going to hear about it. That's all they're going to want to talk about. And even now, when the Leafs are having a really good season, you're still going to find things to try and talk about that aren't going well. They talk about Nylander being on the fourth line, but last night he had probably one of his best games the night before on Friday with getting 3 points in Edmonton and playing well in that fourth line. So it gives them a chance for the Leafs to be able to jumble their lines up and try not to worry about what the media is saying, because it's all what matters internally, what you guys are saying. And I think the Leafs do a great job of protecting their players from kind of what's going on outside of them right now.
You know, Colton, sticking with the Leafs, and, you know, you mentioned, you know, the depth that they have. You know, they're able to put, you know, a guy like James Van Riemsdyk on the third line there with Tyler Bozak and Mitch Marner. And when you look at this team, we knew that they were going to be skilled just based on the way they played last year, almost upsetting the Washington Capitals in the first round. But when you consider that, you know, they brought in Patrick Marleau to be that veteran presence and kind of guide the young players, are they kind of getting exactly what they were hoping for when they signed him to that 3-year deal?
Well, they got a great mix of young talent and veteran leadership. You look around that room and you got guys like, you know, obviously Marleau, bringing him is what they wanted. But then you got guys like Bozak, JVR, and also even Kadri has done a great job of maturing in his time there as a Leaf and being a good person to, as a leader in that room and on and off the ice. He's really kind of added that to his game and changed his game to being even a checking forward. So they have a good balance of that leadership that you need in a room when you have a good core group of veteran guys and then a really good skill young team like they do. It's a good mixture, and I just like the way that they're make the Jets, I mean, for the Leafs are made up.
Colton, you know, you're living out on the East Coast, and you can take the boy out of Garden City, but you can never take the Garden City out of the boy. As a fellow Garden City, I can say that. But what have you seen from this Jets team? You probably don't watch them as much as you get to watch the Rangers or the Leafs. But what are you seeing from this Jets team as a former resident of the city?
Well, it's always good to see the Jets playing well. I've watched them growing up. I still continue to watch them. Their team, I talked about how big, but yet how fast they are. They're still such a big team. This wears on you, and I like that style of hockey. Kind of reminds me of like the Kings when I played. Just how big they are. You don't have to be over physical. You just use your strength and your size and your speed. You look around the league. You need that depth on forwards, and they have that. And their top line of what is it, Connor,
Shifley, and Wheeler.
Wheeler. Absolutely on fire right now, and it's fun to watch. They're scoring goals, and that's just fun hockey.
Colton, we'll let you go on this last question. The Leafs are in the midst of their road trip through Western Canada. They played, this afternoon in Vancouver, tonight everywhere else besides the West Coast. They were in Calgary and they were in Edmonton earlier in the week. I was reading an article earlier in the week that sort of advocated for more games between all the Canadian teams. We know that here in Winnipeg we only see the Leafs twice, home and away. Same with the Habs, same with the Senators. In your experience, when you were playing with the Leafs, how special were those games where you'd go either into Winnipeg or you'd go into Vancouver or Calgary or Edmonton, those games against the Western Conference teams that you don't see as often when you're a member of the Leafs?
Well, for me, it was always good because you go into Winnipeg, you go into Vancouver, there's always family there, so it was always nice to kind of get those games in when you got the family there. But then there's just also just that Canadian hockey rivalry that you get when you go in these buildings. There's always there's going to be intensity. There's going to be something to play for. So you always need to be a little bit more competitive that when you play those games. So I think it's good for hockey. It's always fun to watch. The Leafs going into Vancouver tonight, looking to finally get a sweep a road trip here. They've always struggled on these ones. So we'll see how they play tonight in Vancouver, and it's not a back to back, which is nice. I always remember always playing that. Sunday, usually a Sunday afternoon 4:00 game when we played that Vancouver game, and it was back to back after a Saturday night game. It was always tough, so it's nice to be going resting up in this one, and hopefully they can take this one and get back to Toronto.
And Colton Orr played 477 NHL games. As Dave mentioned, he's a good old Garden City boy. Colton, appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you, guys. Keep up the good work today, and we'll talk to you soon.
Absolutely. We'll do it again real soon, Colton. Thanks very much for joining us. We're live at CF Polo Park in support of Toy Mountain. Salvation Army, we're dropping off gifts. We're raising cash. It's a tremendous opportunity here. Come say hello. We're on air with you till 12 noon. The party goes here till 9 o'clock tonight. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on TSN 1290. Ten minutes before the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by Keener Jerseys. Over the past 20 years, Keener Jerseys has established itself as one of the best jersey customizers in the world. Specializing in customization services and branded team apparel, Keener Jerseys is changing the game with world-class craftsmanship and unparalleled service. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want customized, visit KeenerJerseys.com or check out their showroom at 982 Portage Avenue. Keener Jerseys, tell them that Illegal Curve sent you. Sort of an interesting phenomenon in the NHL this season. We talk so much about lame duck coaches, but the concept of a lame duck general manager is not something that's readily discussed. We're in the weird scenario where there are four prominent general managers: Ken Holland of the Detroit Red Wings, Lou Lamoriello of the Maple Leafs, Doug Armstrong of the Blues, and Chuck Fletcher of the Wild, all in the final year of their contract. Sort of a rare situation. You don't often know that about general managers. The guys at TSN Insider Trading spoke about that earlier this week.
Mike Russo of The Athletic reporting that Chuck Fletcher, the GM in Minnesota, is in his final year of his deal. Didn't that used to be very rare that that would happen with GMs?
Absolutely, and now we're seeing the opposite. I mean, last year everybody made a big deal when Brad Treliving in the Calgary Flames was in the final year of his deal. He got it done right at the end of the season. But look at this. I don't ever recall five general managers in the National Hockey League, especially those with the seniority, tenure, and stature, Kenny Holland, Chuck Fletcher, and Doug Armstrong, without contracts. And Lou Lamoriello, for that matter, with the Toronto Maple Leafs, and Jim Benning with the Vancouver Canucks. I'm not sure whether this is a trend that we're going to see more of with owners, where they're deciding, you know what, I don't want to lock into a guy until we see how our team is at the end of that contract term.
That's Bob McKenzie talking about the general managers who are set to be quote-unquote UFAs at season's end. There's some big names there. Kenny Holland is one of the longest-term general manager in the NHL.
He is.
With the Red Wings.
20 years,
sort of right behind David Poile there with the Predators.
He was with the Wings organization before that, but 97 he became GM.
That's right. But, I mean, can you believe that, you know, that these general managers are going to go somewhere else in a lot of these cases? I mean, it's hard to imagine Ken Holland as a general manager on a different team.
What is happening?
I'm not
right
sure
now.
What's happening or if that's playing on air.
Apparently,
we're
grabbing some potatoes.
Yes. So, what about the general managers?
That was awesome, by the way.
What about the general managers and their UFA status?
Yeah, and you know, Drew, when you're talking about the fifth general manager that Bob McKenzie mentioned was Jim Benning
of Vancouver,
as you mentioned off air, and you know, to me, the most interesting ones, Drew, are Ken Holland, as you mentioned, and Doug Armstrong. To me, Lou Lamoriello, I mean, let's be honest, guys, Lou Lamoriello is quite a bit older, than your typical general manager. I think the plan was always for Lou Lamoriello, exactly, to not necessarily be there for 10 or 15 years. I wouldn't be surprised if Lou Lamoriello was around for another 3 or 4 years, but I'm just saying.
And they have general managers in waiting in Toronto, and Kyle Dubas, allegedly, and Mark Hunter.
Exactly. So when you're talking about Kenny Holland, I actually think the Detroit Red Wings have, you know, had a pretty impressive, you know, first 25 or so games of the season. You know, they're treading water right now. I believe they're
10-11-5.
Yeah, they're a few points out of a playoff spot right now.
They had been playing better earlier in the year. Right. They've hit a bit of a downturn since then.
And this, let's be honest, guys, this is a rebuild. And you're seeing, you know, Anthony Mantha, you know, have an excellent year for the Red Wings. You're seeing Dylan Larkin now having an excellent year for the Red Wings. I mean, these are the young pieces, the young future of the Red Wings. And so when you're talking about Ken Holland, you know, you mentioned, you know, Drew, that he's the longest tenured general manager right now. And, you know, just what Ken Holland has accomplished in Detroit, I don't think he's going anywhere, but I think that when you're talking about, you know, Doug Armstrong, again, he's been there for 10 years. You forget that, you know, Doug Armstrong.
Well, he deserves he's done a great job in retooling that Blues team.
And, you know, it's interesting.
That Braden Schenn trade looks like a steal.
Right, and so none of these general managers, I think, are going anywhere.
Let me ask you this, Dave. You know, we're always concerned about the lame duck coach. Here in Winnipeg, Paul Maurice needed a contract extension because he was into his final year and he was going to be a lame duck coach.
Right.
And Chevy, you know, the same idea that he was sort of coming to the end of the contract that he had as general manager. Why are we not as concerned, or why do teams seem to be not as concerned about lame duck general managers anymore than they used to be?
I would suspect it. Well, you mean in terms of, I think it's two things. Number one, I think that they're not exposed to the media on a daily basis. So the reality is that it doesn't become, whereas the coach has to answer questions.
A coach's decision impacts exactly what you see on the ice on a game-by-game basis.
And so they're going to ask questions and stuff like that. Whereas the general manager, that's really the ownership's decision, as opposed to what the media, you know, the media could ask a question, but really ultimately the decision is the ownership's. It has nothing to do with anybody else. So the fact of the matter is, you don't have access to the general manager the same way you do to the coaches and the players, so that doesn't become a daily distraction. Whereas, so if you have a general manager who doesn't have a contract, realistically he may get asked casually about it, but the fact is it's not going to be coming up on a day-to-day basis.
And I think you have to factor in how long a general manager has been there. We've talked about Ken Holland's been with the Red Wings for 20 years.
Well, we asked Greg Krupa about it from the Detroit News at the beginning of the month, and he said he could pretty much do whatever he wants.
Well, and I think, you know, when you've won the Stanley Cups like he has with that organization, and, you know, you've had all of those excellent player moves and signings, you know, Chuck Fletcher, guys, to me, maybe is the least secure out of all of these general managers that we're talking about, because we mentioned, you know, Drew mentioned Doug Armstrong. St. Louis Blues are, you know, second in the Central Division, second in the Western Conference right now. He's made some really good moves, and he's made some really good signings as of late. I don't think Doug Armstrong is going anywhere.
No.
And when you talk about Kevin Cheveldayoff, well, first of all, the Jets 2.0 have only had one general manager. They're first right now in the Western Conference, tied for first in the league. Chevy's not going anywhere. I don't think anybody's going to say that. So when you're talking about
Chuck Fletcher in Minnesota, right. the Wild are struggling, 12-10-3 so far.
Well, there have been some bad contracts there. You're talking about Jason Pominville.
Yeah.
I mean, you're talking about, I mean,
traded it away. But
and the trades
sure.
also. You know, I mean,
they're up against the salary cap, and they're a team that's struggling right now. And he went all in last year, right at the trade deadline, acquiring Martin Hanzel, yeah. You know, for that, you know, giving up a first-round pick and a second-round pick. And they lost in five games.
Right. And so, you know, I'm not saying that, you know, Chuck Fletcher is going to be fired anytime soon. I'm just saying, when you're talking about Ken Holland, Doug Armstrong, and
Lou Lamoriello,
when you're talking about
Chuck Fletcher, Jim Benning,
of those five GMs, the one that stands out to me as possibly maybe being in a little bit of danger is Chuck Fletcher.
I would agree with you. I do find it sort of it's obviously a shift in the mindset of in the NHL, where you always needed the stability that comes with a general manager having a long-term contract. That was always the mantra for years upon years, and at least in the last couple of years, it seems to be shifting a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I would say is how much faith you have in a general manager to making trades, right? If this is the guy, if you don't have the faith to give him a long-term contract, do you have faith to allow him to direct
the
vision
the team.
Of the team? Because remember, a general manager isn't generally only looking at a team for this year.
Sure.
They have to make decisions that impact the team for years to come.
When you're talking about the salary cap, general managers are looking 3 or 4 years down the line.
That's right. Absolutely. And contracts, I mean, like, the reality is Kevin Cheveldayoff, who obviously has a contract, but the fact is, you know, are you allowing him to be the guy who's going to negotiate the Patrick Laine deal if you don't have faith to keep him past this year, in theory, I'm saying, obviously.
Yeah, we're using Chevy as an example. Obviously, he's got a long-term contract. But if you're in Minnesota and you're struggling right now and you're a game under 500 or whatever you are, and maybe you're on the fringe of the playoff team and you're on the cusp of deciding if you have to maybe sell to try and retool the team, if you don't have faith in Chuck Fletcher to be that guy, why are you allowing him to make decisions?
And there's a lot of pressure on this team, Drew. I mean, it's not good enough anymore for this team just to get into the playoffs and be one and done in the
Minnesota
first round.
Wild you're talking
Absolutely.
About.
Absolutely. And so you wonder, you know, Minnesota Wild right now are in danger of missing the playoffs. They're what are they, fifth in the Central right now?
Yeah.
So, I mean, again, you know, this is a results-oriented business. And again, I think Chuck Fletcher is a good general manager. I'm not saying that he's not a good general manager, but when you're talking about, you know, some of these guys in the last year of their contracts, you wonder if the Wild's ownership group, you know, believes that Chuck Fletcher is the guy that's going to right this ship.
It will be interesting. Time will tell if these guys end up getting contract extensions or if they're allowed to walk into free agency. But it's something to keep an eye on, a different phenomenon in the NHL. When we come back, Sunaya Sapurji is going to join us. She's with TheAthletic.com. She's been the author of a fantastic series that looks at grassroots hockey throughout the world, not just Canada and the U.S., but looking at Finland and Sweden and Denmark and all sorts of other up-and-coming hockey nations. Sunaya joins us next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live at CF Polo Park. It's Toy Mountain in support of the Salvation Army. We're on TSN 1290. Shortly after 11 in the morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live at Toy Mountain at CF Polo Park. There's been an absolute huge donation of toys just coming, just being brought in front of us right now. Manitoba LSX gets a big shout out. They actually needed a trolley to bring the amount of toys that they just dropped off.
And a pallet.
And a pallet. It's incredible.
That's one big box,
That's
Drew.
That's one big box of toys here at CF Polo Park as part of Toy Mountain in support of the Salvation Army. Let's head out now on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From TheAthletic.com, we're pleased to welcome back to the program Sunaya Sapurji. Sunaya has been the author of a fantastic series that focuses on the grassroots of hockey here in Canada, in the United States, in Finland, Sweden, and Denmark. It's all available at TheAthletic.com. Sunaya, welcome back to the program. First and foremost, congratulations. It's an absolutely fantastic series of articles.
Oh, thanks, guys. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Yeah, first of all, how are you feeling also? I know you've been a little under the weather.
I've been sick for like the last week, so I've got like Paul's on standby. I've got my cough syrup. It's all good.
Well, we appreciate you joining us on this Saturday morning. And Sulay, let's get to sort of the origins of the article. And it's not just one article, it's a series of articles. It's a week-long series of articles. You know, why did you decide to tackle this incredibly complex area? I mean, you talk about the grassroots of hockey. It's such an overwhelming sort of topic to cover. Why did you decide that this needed to be a challenge you wanted to undertake?
You know what? I think it started first as a look at how different countries develop players for the World Juniors. That was kind of how it started. But then as I started talking to people and kind of researching it, it kind of grew from there. And I have a two-year-old, and so I thought, you know, it would be kind of interesting to see what other countries are doing as kind of some background research for my own impending hockey parenthood.
You know, Sunaya, I thought first of all, every single article was excellent. I really liked part three when you were talking about Finland and how successful they've been in developing young players. And, you know, as you know, the Winnipeg Jets have several Finnish players in their system, Patrick Laine obviously being the obvious one, and Christian Vesalainen, who was drafted late in the 2017 draft. And you mentioned how specifically coaches are developing mental attributes such as self-confidence, the feeling of responsibility, and optimal arousal, and how important that is for players around the age of 13. How has this given Finnish players an edge in the international game?
Well, I think they start teaching that stuff at 13, but because it's such a difficult thing it's such a difficult concept to master, that players don't actually get to that point where they can figure it out until they're about 23 or 24 years old. But once they figure it out, you know, it can really help them in terms of getting where they want to be mentally in terms of peak performance. So that's one thing that coaches in Finland have learned, that, you know, teaching that at a younger age really, really helps down the road. And it's not just young players that they're trying to do this with. It's with older players as well, but they're starting with the younger age group around the 12, 13 age.
It's one thing to undertake this sort of project. It's another thing to have the organizations you're reaching out to agree to do it. How easy and how accommodating were they when you came with your questions and wanted to kind of undertake asking about each one's developmental program?
You know what? I was actually shocked at how open and forthcoming everyone was. I think one thing I didn't realize when I started this was that already countries are already sharing this information with one another. You know, everyone is very focused on winning medals and, you know, doing well at the Olympics and producing NHLers, but at the grassroots level, at the developmental level, when it comes to making hockey enjoyable for kids, there's a lot of sharing going on between countries in terms of the science, in terms of the programs that are working, you know, long-term athlete development. And so, you know, you'll see somebody like Bob Mancini, who works for USA Hockey. You know, he was just in Thunder Bay recently giving a talk about the USA development model and how that has helped their players. And so, you know, guys are going to other countries and really sharing information to make hockey better for younger kids, but also to try and help grow the game, because a lot of problems, you know, a lot of countries have are in regards to retention rates. So you see a lot of kids leaving hockey at around 12 years of age or 9 years of age just because it's not fun anymore, or, you know, they're burning out, or, you know, they have injuries. So, you know, it's kind of like a global problem everyone's trying to combat. So there is a lot of sharing of information that happens.
Sunaya Sapurji is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Sunaya is with TheAthletic.com. We're discussing her Grassroots to Gold series of articles. We just sent out a link via our Twitter feed, at Illegal Curve, if you want to check out the articles. Sunaya, you mentioned fun. And it's sort of hard to believe.
We like fun.
We like fun, and you would want to, anything I participate in, it's usually because I find it to be fun. But a lot of these hockey nations said that they've gone away, or they forgot that the purpose of what they're doing is to be fun for the kids. And then I look at, you know, Canada here and the uproar that was felt in Ontario in particular when under six hockey was mandated to be cross ice as opposed to be the entire length of the ice. Here in Canada, I mean, we know hockey's almost more important here than it should be. Do we need to maybe recalibrate our expectations and remind ourselves and have parents remind themselves that this is supposed to be about fun first and foremost?
100%. And I think we need to really take a look at the culture here in Canada specifically. And I mean, it's not just Canada. The U.S. has this problem as well. But it's more specific into regions that have traditionally been hockey markets, like Michigan. You know, they have a much easier time in what we would consider the non-traditional markets, like California, Arizona. But in Canada, there are no non-traditional hockey markets. It's pretty much all traditional hockey markets. So, yeah, and I mean, I think a lot of it has to do with the kind of culture that has, I don't know when it started, but it kind of seems to me like it's gone off the rails a little bit. Like it's not as much about kids having fun as it is trying to prepare them for like the next level or trying to get a scholarship or, you know, make it to the OHL or the NHL. And that really isn't what it should be about. It should be about, you know, kids having fun, you know, camaraderie, you know, being part of a team, you know, acquiring good social skills like that. I think at some point we kind of have lost focus as a country about what hockey should really be.
You know, Sunaya, in Drew's question, he mentioned the cross ice initiative. And for those who are unfamiliar with it, it's essentially, you know, splitting the ice up into two instead of playing the full length of the ice. And you mentioned in part one of your series that it was in 2010 that USA Hockey introduced the cross ice initiative. Hockey Canada just introduced that initiative this past year, and you mentioned that Sean Fitzgerald has written about it. In your research, how has that been received across Canada, that cross ice, kids playing on both sides of the rink, children under the age of six?
Yeah, it's been mixed. A lot of places in Canada have already had cross ice and have been using it for a while now, but there are other places that haven't, and this was just a mandate for everyone to switch to it. And there's a lot of pushback. I mean, anytime, I think in Canada, anytime you change anything, I mean, if you look at body checking, which I think they changed the rules for that in 2013 for peewees, I mean, there was huge blowback, you know, for that decision. So in a country like Canada, change does not come easily. And so, you know, the cross ice, of course, there were people who were unhappy about it because, you know, oh, you know, that's not what hockey looks like. It should be a full sheet, even though, you know, it's six-year-old kids who can, you know, barely make it up the ice, which when you think about it, it really doesn't make sense.
Not in the least bit.
So, Naya, when you wrote about part two, you wrote about Denmark, and, you know, we have the dynamic Dane here in Nikolaj Ehlers, and while the majority of his development did come in Switzerland, as you wrote, what kind of impact is he going to have, a player of that stature and a player who's only continuing to grow into the, you know, become a marquee NHL name, what kind of impact can someone like that have on a smaller market like Denmark?
Oh, it's huge. It's already huge. I think anytime you have somebody like a Nick Ehlers or, you know, somebody who has made it to the NHL, just him being drafted was big news there. And anytime you can get on TV in Denmark for hockey, it's huge for them.
You know, Sunaya, in part one, again, I go back to part one, which was about USA Hockey, and you talk about the success
of the U.S. National Development Program, and you know we've seen a product of that. Jacob Trouba played for the U.S. National Team Development Program. In your research, has Hockey Canada looked at starting something similar? I know this has been talked about before, or is the Program of Excellence kind of their response to the National Team Development Program?
Yeah, they're not really that interested in it. The last part of the series is a Q&A with Tom Rennie, and he specifically kind of shot down that idea. The Program of Excellence is pretty much their answer to it, and of course the CHL plays a big part in that, and so his response was kind of like, we don't really need to hothouse, you know, 22 of the best because we've got 60 CHL teams that you know do that same thing for us.
Sunaya, we'll let you go on this last question. I thought one of the most interesting parts of the article, from my perspective, is what they're doing with HC Gothenburg in Sweden. And you know, for obviously those who don't know, this is sort of maybe an underprivileged area in Sweden. And they've really made the hockey arena and the hockey team there a focal point of the community, and they've really reached out to the underprivileged people in the community and made hockey as accessible as they can. Can you maybe, sort of two parts, shine some light on what they're doing with specifics better than I just did? And then two, is this something here in Canada that we need to do a better job of, making hockey, which is so expensive, make it more realistic for those who are underprivileged to be able to play the game and get involved in the game?
Yeah, and I think that was one thing during the series. I didn't expect that every single person I spoke to in every different country, you know, that cost was a huge problem across the board. Like, even in Denmark, I was surprised to hear that is, like, a major issue for them as well. And so, yeah, it's a place just outside of Gothenburg called Angered. And they built an arena there in 2011. They started construction on it, and when it finished in 2013, they started a hockey club there to cater primarily to girls and women. But that area has a lot of immigrants. It's probably one of the biggest clusters of immigrants in Sweden, and so. You know, their program now has 150 girls from 27 countries. And so they're just doing a fantastic job of making hockey accessible to people who probably didn't know anything about hockey when they first arrived. And so that's a big push. The Swedish Ice Hockey Federation has a big push now to bring more immigrants and more women to the game, because that's an area where they've really been lacking in the past.
Sunaya Sapurji is with TheAthletic.com. The series of articles is called Grassroots to Gold. You can follow a link to it via our Twitter feed at Illegal Curve. Sunaya, tremendous work. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Yeah, it's a great series, Sunaya. I really enjoyed it.
Thanks for joining us this morning to talk about the series, and keep up the great work.
Thanks, guys.
Take care, Sunaya. Big shout-out before we go to break to the Scouts Canada. They just dropped off another absolute truckload, trainload. I don't even know what it came on.
Yeah, that was big.
A lot of toys. Just tremendous job by Scouts Canada. So they get a great shout-out here at Toy Mountain. We're live at CF Polo Park. We're on air with you here till 12 noon, but they're accepting toys up until about 9 o'clock tonight. So plenty of time for you to come down, join the party, come say hello. Much more to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, because Saturdays are for the Curve on TSN 1290. Saturday morning, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live at CF Polo Park as part of Toy Mountain in support of the Salvation Army. This segment of the show brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy for over 30 years, pardon me. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. if you're looking for something to do for New Year's Eve, perhaps, we're only about 29 days away for that. Rumors Comedy Club, they're going to have two shows. Tickets available, rumorscomedyclub.com. That's where you can get all your details. On Thursday night, the Oilers and the Leafs did battle in Edmonton. Connor McDavid against Austin Matthews. It was a back-and-forth game until this happened for the Edmonton Oilers.
And for Marlowe, in on Nurse. Patrick Marlowe spins him around and shoots. Poisson makes the save. Nurse lost his helmet. Rebound, score! Fired home by Nazem Kadri. And Toronto leads 5-4.
This is unbelievable. Chris Russell shoots this into his own net. This is not Kadri. This is Chris Russell. Watch Russell spin to clear the puck, and he drills it through the legs of Brossoit. Oh my goodness. Watch Russell, he wants to get rid of it. He's got two goals in the period, one in each net.
There's nobody better, by the way, than Ray Ferraro. He's the best analyst in the game.
So good.
And, you know, Ezzie, this is an Edmonton Oilers team that everyone had as, a lot of people had as a Western Conference favorite. They had them as
I picked them to be in the Stanley Cup final.
There you go. Ezzie gave
Have one bad pick. One good pick, one bad pick.
Ezzie with the kiss of death. They now drop to 10-14-2 on the season. They're in second last in the Western Conference. I mean, thank God for the Arizona Coyotes. Otherwise, the Oilers would be dead last. They just lost Cam Talbot, their starting goaltender, for a minimum of 2 weeks and likely longer. Is this rock bottom for the Oilers? Can they bounce back from this? Given where they are, given the number of teams ahead of them, given the adversity they're currently facing, can the Oilers bounce back from this?
You know, Drew, I was watching that game live, and I couldn't believe what I was seeing because the Edmonton Oilers really needed that game. As you mentioned, you know, the Oilers at the bottom of the standings with the Arizona Coyotes right now, but that's just so unfortunate for this team and so unfortunate for Laurent Brossoit, right?
Yeah.
Because as you mentioned, Cam Talbot's going to be out for the next week to 2 weeks. He might be out for longer.
Yeah, Todd McClellan said 2 weeks minimum, could very well be longer.
Right, and they've had to recall Nick Ellis, Dave, from the Bakersfield Condors. So they're going to run with Laurent Brossoit here, guys. And, you know, Brossoit has never been a starting goaltender in the National Hockey League. He's still relatively young. Mm-hmm. His career is really just starting. And, you know, this Oilers team, you know, you look at the team and you say, okay, well, they've got Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl and Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, Milan Lucic. This team should be better. They almost went, you know, to the Western Conference Finals last year. I think if it wasn't for the Anaheim Ducks who got in their way in the second round, Dave, I think they would have played the Nashville Predators in the third round. But it's just unbelievable what has happened this year. You know, a losing streak has turned into an extended losing streak. And, you know, it looked like a couple of weeks back, guys, they were starting to turn it around here. But, you know, for me, it all starts in goal and defensively. And, you know, this just isn't the same team that we saw last year. Before Cam Talbot went down with the injury, Dave, he was struggling. And, you know, the timing of this injury is just horrible.
Well, the problem also is it shows a lack of depth with goaltending. And you know, the Oilers chose to ride Talbot, I think, 70-plus games last year.
72 games last season,
somewhere
something
in that,
like that
realm. And you see what happens when you have a guy who really has been the main guy the entire season. Your backup just doesn't have that confidence. So then the problem is you throw your backup in on a team that's already kind of reeling. And what's going to happen? And we're seeing the impact of that in Edmonton right now. And, you know, it's funny how fans are so quick to make trades. You know, the Jets right now have a lot of depth on the in goaltending, and people are like, trade it away. But you see what happens.
Sure.
With teams, it could happen so quickly. You know, you have an injury to Connor Hellebuck. Is Eric Comrie now, you're with Steve Mason out, Eric Comrie's your number one guy. Then you know, people say trade Hutchinson right now. But the problem is, you can't necessarily afford to do that because you just never know. It's such an important position. And to just, when you have the depth, you need it because Edmonton's reeling because they don't have that depth.
Yeah, Drew, I was just going to quickly mention, you know, big game tonight between the Oilers and the Flames in Calgary. And then the Oilers are off for 3 days before they play Philly at home. And then they go back on the road for three games. And, you know, you wonder if this team is going to make a move because the Oilers have already made a move trading Juuse Jokinen into the LA Kings for Michael Camilleri. Unfortunately, you know, Camilleri is yet to score a goal yet. I believe he's got a couple of assists. But really, Drew, Mike Camilleri is a guy that ideally he's on your third or fourth line. Michael Camilleri at this point in his career, really like Camilleri, but he's not a top six guy right now.
Maybe, top six, he's maybe barely a fourth liner at this point.
Right, and you know he still has the ability to contribute offensively, but you wonder, more so what I meant by a move is in goal.
Yeah.
Because if Cam Talbot, guys, is out for an extended period of time, you wonder, you know, do the Oilers try to make a move with another team that maybe has some goaltending depth? Because
but even if they acquire a different goaltender, their defense is in such shambles right now, and Andre Sekera is not expected back, you know, imminently, that I don't know if any goaltender is going to make the big difference. Because, I mean, it's not like Cam Talbot is a slug of a goalie. He's a pretty good goaltender, and even with him in the lineup, the team was struggling in net. They just couldn't get anything going. It's almost getting to the point of, you know, if they make a trade, you know, what are they going to acquire? What are they going to trade out?
Well, there's a lot they could acquire. I mean, you look at that defense. They can bring in a defenseman. They can bring in a goaltender. I mean,
what's it going to cost them though?
Well,
and when is it a lost season already?
Well, it could be already.
I mean, are you trading Ryan Nugent-Hopkins? Then look what you're doing to your forward depth. They don't have a ton of offensive forward depth after McDavid and Dreisaitl.
And it'll lead into what we have coming up next segment, which is called Mitch Peacock and the strength of your farm system, because the Oilers are reeling a little bit because they don't have that strong system with...
Well, most of their draft picks are in the NHL right now. Yep. Jesse Puljujärvi is up with the big club. He started the season in the American Hockey League, Dave. So,
right.
I mean, you know, reinforcements aren't coming offensively. It's defensively, as you mentioned. So if you're not going to make a trade, Drew, then this current group of defensemen, they have to be better. And I think you're just asking a lot out of Laurent Brossoit. As you mentioned, Cam Talbot played 70-plus games, and now with him down, you don't have really a backup that you know can provide you with a similar type of goaltending. Again, nothing.
If you had confidence in Laurent Brossoit, he would have played last year. He would have played 20 games for the Oilers. He wouldn't have had to run out Cam Talbot for 70-some odd games.
Some goalies do like... I mean, Dubnyk likes to play a lot of games. I mean, goalies like to play the game, so... I don't disagree with you. I mean, that was kind of the point I made earlier, was just that you really expected him to play a little bit more than what he did. You know, so to me, ideally you play Talbot 65 games. You know, you give Wausau the 17 to 20 game mark. I don't disagree with you, Drew. I'm just saying, some goalies just demand that ice time.
And Dave, Brossoit isn't a slouch either. I believe he won a Memorial Cup, didn't he, with the Edmonton Oil Kings? I know they went to the Memorial Cup. And last year, his numbers were actually pretty good with a sub-2 goals against average and a .928 save percentage. Mind you, Drew, that was in 8 games. But, you know, with the defense struggling and, you know, with the overall team struggling, I just think it's asking a lot of Laurent Brossoit to play night in, night out.
Well, the Jets will face the Oilers twice this month. So from a Jets fan's perspective, you certainly hope their struggles continue and the Jets get to beat up on a surprising bottom feeder in the NHL thus far this season. When we come back, we talk about the other team atop the standings here in Winnipeg. That's the Manitoba Moose. Mitch Peacock, the voice of the Moose, joins us next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live from Toy Mountain at CF Polo Park on TSN 1290. Bottom of the hour, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live at Toy Mountain at CF Polo Park in support of the Salvation Army. Come on, drop off a new unwrapped toy. You can also make a cash donation here. There's some great prizes to be entered into a draw to win. And Fred Penner's here. So everything is exciting here.
But did the cat come back, Drew?
Well, I don't know. I guess we'll have to ask Fred about that.
Wouldn't we have to find out the very next day?
Both of you guys should just be quiet. Let's head to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program, he's the voice of your Manitoba Moose, the first place Manitoba Moose, Mitch Peacock, joins us on the line. Mitch, good morning. How do the sounds of first place Manitoba Moose, how does that sound to you?
Sounds as good as jingle bells in the background, guys. It's a nice thing to have any time, but especially at this time of year.
Absolutely. You know, the Manitoba Moose, 16-5-1. They won again on Thursday night on home ice. They do battle again tonight on home ice. Michael Hutchinson named goaltender of the month in the AHL. Is this all start sort of in net for the Manitoba Moose? We know that the offense has been clicking on all cylinders, but does it start also with the back end and how impressive their goaltending has been?
Well, there's absolutely no debate about the goaltending. It is superb, arguably the best duo in the American Hockey League when you have Michael Hutchinson and Eric Comrie together. And they have been really, really strong, I think especially beyond the first couple of games of the season. Although I have to say that Michael was really, really good in Grand Rapids, the second game of the year. But these guys really hit their stride four or five games in and have been excellent for this hockey team and difference makers without a doubt in the crease. But interestingly, I would say that it probably all started in the summer when the organization made a decision to continue the process of moving this group forward. And so some players were not retained, players who were not re-signed, Scott Kosmachuk, Dan DeSalvo, also Ryan Olsen, players like that, that they didn't see necessarily as part of the plan going forward. And then they went out and made some bold moves in bringing in some veteran players to try and support the prospects who were taking strides and who were seen as needing to experience the next level of competition, the American Hockey League, and that's being a really high-end team. And so you get a Cameron Schilling and a Buddy Robinson and a Michael Scarbosa, those sorts of players who've been around the league, who are proven commodities, who can push for places at the next level, and will have a mindset. And that's really, I think, what the organization had in mind when they started to add those key elements, or the approach that those guys brought to the rink. I was talking with Peter Stojkovic this morning, who also is a really important part of the success the team is having. And Peter talked about it, that I said, you know, nobody would have thought that November would end with a record of 12-2. And he said, essentially, I'll correct you, because we thought we could actually do 12-2. We thought we had a chance to win every game we played. So for me, there's a couple of things that are sort of the genesis of what's happening here. And that is the maturation of prospects, the addition of some really good veteran players, and then just a feeling in the room and a mindset in the group that they're going to try and win every game. And I know that every team says that, but there's a feeling in this team when they play that that's what could happen. And it doesn't matter if it's a low-scoring game or a high-scoring game or a heavy special teams game. They believe that at the end of the night, they have a better chance than the other team to take the 2 points. And that's really driven them forward.
Well, Mitch, you know, further to your point, they got their 16th win on November 30th, which I like to calculate that every year. And they look at 2015-16, they got that on February 20th. Last year, they got it on January 20th. So they're well ahead of schedule. This team, you know, is getting those wins, as you talked about. I talked about it with Chase DeLeo after the game on Thursday night, and he described it as the dark times. Mm-hmm. And, you know, especially considering that this is, you know, we always talk about how important this is for the Jets. This is pretty much the entire 2015 draft class for Winnipeg that's playing now with the Manitoba Moose. Mm-hmm. And, you know, now they're playing in a winning culture. And, you know, Chase said how difficult it was sometimes for that team early on, the first year in Winnipeg, to be playing and losing all those games. But they were still developing. But how much more do you think this is helping collectively the group develop with all putting together all of these wins?
Yeah, it's a really great observation, and I know you're around the team a lot, so you would pick up on that. And I think that you'd also know that because they had so many players coming out of either junior or college, going back a couple of years, they felt that they really needed to give those guys a chance to play at the American Hockey League level. And so that was the phase of the evolution, the sort of key step in restocking the cupboards that were so bare when the franchise came over from Atlanta. And so they had to make the decision to, in some respects, bite the proverbial bullet and say, okay, guys, here you go, ready or not, you're playing in the American Hockey League. And to some extent, ready or not, you're playing in the National Hockey League, as we saw at the end of that 2015-16 season. So those players were sort of thrown in and told to learn on the fly and were told to trust the process. I know Chase said that in talking with you the other night, Dave, that you know, they were told to trust the process. And some of them were so young, they didn't even know what the process was. They just thought, well, how come we're not winning hockey games? But slowly but surely, they've come to understand, the guys that are still here, how they can offer something to the organization and how they can grow their games to be good professional players. And now, yes, they get that opportunity as more mature professionals to work with other more mature professionals to take it to the next level, because it is important to learn how to win. It's important to learn how to compete, and it's important to be cognizant of what success is all about, playing on the road, playing at home, playing with leads, playing from behind, what it takes to be successful in special teams. All of those things are important in terms of the development of these players. And the organization, I think, is right on top of that, knew it coming into the year that it was time to make a move forward. And they've done that.
You know, Mitch, we have to ask you about Mason Appleton. He surprised some by turning pro after 2 years of college hockey. And not only is he second in the AHL in rookie scoring behind Dylan Strome, he's actually top 10 in the entire AHL in scoring with 22 points in 23 games. How impressed have you been with what Mason Appleton's been able to do in just his first 22 games of pro hockey?
Yeah, I'm very impressed. This is a very mature young player, a very mature young man. He was a strong student athlete at Michigan State, first year freshman of the year for the team, second year their outstanding player. He was on his way to being their captain. He was all Big Ten academic. And this guy just seems to have a maturity about his approach. He understands what he brings. He understands what the team is looking for. He's able to put the two together. And I think what's really caught my eye, a couple of things, the consistency to his game. And another thing would be the fact that when they have moved him onto a combination along with Jack Roslovic and Nick Petan, he hasn't changed the way that he played. There's a temptation for a lot of players to go, wow, look at this. I'm with these skill guys. Let's fly and, you know, mess around and change everything that got me here. And he just won't do that. He knows that there's certain things he needs to do to be able to contribute to the hockey team and to its success. And he keeps doing it. Wherever they put him, he just keeps going straight ahead with it. And so, you know, it's a real credit to him. And I asked him after the broadcast, after the game, a couple of nights back when we talked to him on the broadcast about where things stand. And he said, without sounding arrogant, that he wasn't surprised because he had a belief in his ability. The points, yes. I mean, he wouldn't have forecast he was a point-of-game player or close to it. But just that he believed in himself. And he thought he could catch on, and he thought that he could grow his game by being focused on hockey. He likes to say, hockey, hockey, hockey. That's what his life is now, because it used to be the student-athlete. And he thinks that hockey, hockey, hockey has helped him to sort of push his whole entire development forward.
Mitch Peacock, the voice of the Manitoba Moose, the voice of the Manitoba Moose.
That was a
guest.
Few years back,
yeah,
Drew.
Yeah. Is our guest on
I
the
was
illegal
actually in the East Coast League then.
is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Mitch, Nick Petan obviously started the year with the Jets, didn't you know, perform to the level he would have expected, got sent down to the Moose, and has been playing better since with 13 points in 16 games. I think he's sort of flying a little under the radar in that, you know, all the talk is about Roslovic and Appleton right now. But Nick Petan, is he sort of just quietly going about his business as he attempts to maybe regain some of that confidence that he may have lost in his struggles with the Jets earlier this year?
You know, I had a chance to talk with Pascal Vincent about Nick Petan the other day, and he almost had a change of mood when I brought up Nick Petan. He got a real focus on his face and got a real sternness in his voice. And he said, look, Nick Petan is making a commitment to becoming a 200-foot player. He wants to be a reliable player on all three zones, in all three zones. He wants to be a guy who can be trusted to play important minutes at important times in hockey games. And we believe that as he learns that, with all of those natural abilities that he has to handle the puck and the poise and all of those things that they will then sort of be elevated in their value as he develops that capacity to be a more rounded player. And I think we've seen this over the years, guys, with many, many players. I know from personal experience, Travis Green is a friend of mine. We grew up in Castlegar, BC. He's a couple of years younger than me, but Travis was an outstanding Western Hockey League player, scored points by the boatload. And when he turned pro in the Islanders organization, they said to him, hey, Travis, we've got Pierre Turgeon, we got Ray Ferraro ahead of you. If you don't figure out how to play the two-way game, you're going to be in the minors for the rest of your life. And he tried to mess with that. He tried to play the offensive game and kind of just keep doing what he'd always done. And he didn't get a sniff until injuries brought him a chance. And Hal Arbour said to him, all right, Travis, you're going to win faceoffs, you're going to kill penalties, you're going to check, or else. And he figured it out and played more than 900 games. And so this happens with players year after year, and, you know, some get it and are able to find a way to play in the National League, and some don't. And I think what we're seeing with Nick Petan right now is Nick making the commitment and putting the work in. And so, you know, anybody who knows Nick knows he's a smart guy and he's a likable guy, and they'd like to see him succeed. So maybe this is that step that is so necessary for him to find that consistent employment up there.
Mitch, there's about 10 more questions I could ask you, but I got to ask about Jack Roslovic. You know,
have Mitch on for another segment.
Well, we could, or we could just keep going right till tonight's game, but he's got pregame prep to go. But no, you know what? Jack Rozovic has taken a jump in his game, and I watched him last year, and I've watched him this year. He has 12 goals already in 23 games. He had 13 last year in 65. He was one of the he was the CCM Player of the Month for November. His game really, to me, is elevated. But you know what fans sometimes don't realize is that he's developing not just offensively with the Moose and the versatility playing center and wing, but also in all facets of the game. He gets to play PK, he gets to play power play. So just maybe touch on how important this is for his development as a complete player for when he gets that call up to the NHL level.
Oh, it's absolutely critical. And that's why the American Hockey League is so important. And that's why people, I think, should have the perspective of understanding and appreciating the value of the American Hockey League and not looking at it as a player failing or a player stalling because he needs some time there. You know, this is where Jack Roslovic is going to learn the things that are going to make him a National Hockey League player for a very long time. And so that's, this is prime time for Jack, and he's taking advantage of it. And as you talked about, shown he can play so well on the wing, learned to play center last year, really, as they gave him a ton of reps in that position. And then the special teams time, he scored that fantastic shorthanded goal in Milwaukee last Saturday night. And when I talked to him about it afterwards, it's interesting the mindset that he brings to the game. You know, he's always thinking offense, even when you ask him about defense, because when I asked him about the shorthanded goal, he said, well, I use my power play understanding to make the read, and then I use my speed and my skill to kind of finish the play off. And I said, well, what about the two-way side of things? And he said, hey, if we got the puck. he understands the way the game is played, and he understands how he can apply himself to it. And boy, is he ever applying himself. You talk about his points. He got 26 points. And I believe he's only got 6 on the power play, which is a dramatic change from last year. So this is a guy who just has made himself a good student of this game, and he's soaking up the lessons, and doesn't he look good?
Mitch, we've just got one more question for you here, and we really appreciate you coming on this morning. Wanted to ask you about Brendan Lemieux. You watched him all year last year in his first full professional season. He played back in 2015-16, but that was only 5 games. How have you seen Brendan Lemieux change since being recalled by the Jets and then coming back down and playing with the Manitoba Moose?
Well, I think importantly, he hasn't changed much because, they want him to play a certain way, and they want him to develop a consistency with that game. And as Paul Maurice likes to say, you need to know who you are and what you bring, and you need to bring that every time. And so I think what's happening with Brendan Lemieux is he's just growing in his understanding of how his attributes can be valuable to the organization, and he wants to find a way to apply those the best he can on a regular basis. And I think it's really fitting that the organization has him working now with Patrice Cormier and with Buddy Robinson, guys who can play a game that fits with his game well. And you've got Patrice Cormier beside you on a night-in, night-out basis. You're never gonna sort of miss the opportunity to learn things because he won't let you. So I think this is a really good young player who made a great self-evaluation in the summer about his size and his strength and how he could be quicker by reducing a little bit of the bulk. And I think that the combination of the change to his fitness and conditioning, not that he was ever out of shape, but just in a different shape now, and then this recognition and acceptance of how he can be a difference maker for the organization has really pushed his game forward. Let's not forget how young he is, but he really seems to be on the right path.
And Mitch Peacock is the voice of the Manitoba Moose. The Moose and the Monsters tonight at 7 o'clock at Bell MTS Place, a game you can hear live on TSN 1290. Mitch, appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Yeah, thanks for making time for me, guys. Enjoy it, and great to hear that you're out there at CF Polo Park and, the fun. It's a great cause.
It is a great cause, and it's a great scene here. Mitch, appreciate your time. Thanks again.
Take care.
When we come back, one final segment this Saturday morning. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on TSN 1290. One final segment this Saturday morning. We are live at Toy Mountain at CF Polo Park. Come on down, drop off a new unwrapped toy.
A toy literally just fell from the mountain.
A toy
on top of Ezzy.
That's
and
okay.
It's a My Little Pony.
That's perfect for you, Ezzy. I think that's right about your age group. Isn't that what it says? You know, from 3 to 35. I think that's what it says for My Little Pony there. But it's a great scene here at CF Polo Park. If you're in the area, come on down. We're accepting cash donations.
We are accepting cash.
Well, I mean, the folks from Scotiabank are doing a great job. It all goes to the Salvation Army as we're here for Toy Mountain until 9 o'clock tonight. Want to give a shout out. As much as the Jets are in first place and the Moose are in first place, we had a texter remind us that there's teams outside of the perimeter. The Brandon Wheat Kings, they're into the top 10 of the CHL rankings. They're 10th this week in the CHL rankings. So the Wheaties are having a good year as well. 16-7-0-1 for the team, 2 hours west of us here down the Trans-Canada Highway. So the Brandon Wheat Kings having a good year so far as well. Going to be a great night tonight. The Moose and the Monsters, Dave, they're going to do battle in the Jets and the Sens tomorrow night.
Moose going for their 9th win in a row?
Well, it's amazing the offensive juggernauts that these two teams are on home ice. I mean, the Jets averaging 5 goals a game on home ice pretty much in the last, since November 1st. And the Moose are just slightly under that as well. I think 4.8 goals a game.
Something like that. It's
so
insane.
Just a great performance on home ice by both the professional teams here in Winnipeg.
You know, let's keep the good times going. Shout out to the University of Manitoba Bison's women's team.
Here we go.
First in the division with an 11-4 record for 32 points. So shout out to the U of M Bisons, another Manitoba team.
It's +1 in Winnipeg. So, I mean, it's all coming up Millhouse.
It's all coming up Millhouse. That's it for this Saturday morning here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thank you to all of our guests for joining us. Mitch Peacock. We were joined by Colton Orr, Sunaya Sapurji, AJ Jakubek, and, of course, by Tom Gulitti. In case you missed any of the show, it's available for download on iTunes. Subscribe, get it sent to your device each and every week. Also available on our website, illegalcurve.com. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener Jerseys. Big thanks to Rory back at the studio doing a great job, Narv on site. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Jets and Moose news at IllegalCurve.com. For Dave Manu, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Saturdays are for the Curve on TSN 1290.